Welcome to the Wild Heart Meditation Center podcast. It is our intention to continue offering these audio recordings free of charge. However, if you would like to donate to support our cause in keeping our facility open in Nashville, you can do so via the Venmo app by sending a donation to @WildHeartNashville, or you can find us online at our website, wildheartmeditationcenter.org, and click the Donate tab. So I was just before the group thinking about this practice and having a meditation practice and having dedicated, you know, some years now to community and sitting retreat and trying to take a deeper dive into mindfulness. I was just thinking about how without mindfulness, how so much of our inner life, our values, our perceptions, our impulses go unnoticed. Right, this simple practice of present awareness allows an opportunity to open up to observe directly our thought stream. And more than just our thoughts, there are our moods, our passing moods, our emotions, our mind states. I talked about five of these mind states last week, the five hindrances, which are craving and aversion, restlessness, lethargy, and self-doubt. And this simple practice helps us to have more clarity of mind, to step back and to observe the thought stream, to observe the mind states and moods. It's this, almost this inner weather system that passes through, or especially emotions and moods. Very tricky, very subtle things to become aware of. Because usually I'm captured and captivated by my mood and emotional state. Right? That's why I like the metaphor of it being like an inner weather system. It's like, you know, if it rains in Nashville for like 3 or 4 days, like my whole attitude about Nashville can change. It's like, man, it's always fucking raining here. You know, because I'm kind of caught up and captivated in that experience. Our thoughts, our emotions, our mind states are so powerful. The Buddha says in one of his famous discourses called the Rohitasa Sutta, he says that it is within this fathom-long body, with its thoughts and perceptions, that you will find the world, the origin of the world, the ceasing of the world, and the path that leads to the ceasing of the world. And so the first time I heard this, the first like 3 or 4 lines really hit home for me. It is within this fathom-long body with its thoughts and perceptions that lies the world and the origin of the world. And I think what he's saying here is that our world is constructed through our thoughts and perceptions, our worldview, our sense of how we relate to people, places, things, experiences in our life. So powerfully dictated by our thoughts and perceptions. But then he says that there's also the ceasing of the world and the path that leads to the ceasing of the world. So what does it mean that in this mind that there's a path that leads to the ceasing of the world? Right? Does it mean that through mindfulness we get some type of like mental lobotomy where we just don't exist in the world, right? A state of non-existence somehow, some extreme bliss. I think that ceasing here, the ceasing of the world, means a letting go of grasping after and getting lost in thoughts. So what he means by the ceasing of the world is that we cease to grab after and get lost in our thoughts. In Zen Buddhism, they call this the monkey mind, swinging from one vine to another vine, the future to the past, to how I'm doing, how good I am, how bad I am, how single I am, how unsingle I am. I'm about to have a baby. I'm very unsingle. These stories that the mind tells us, right? These kind of really subtle perceptions. So the ceasing isn't that we get rid of thoughts or get some type of mental lobotomy where we just don't experience thoughts. That's not the goal of meditation. But where we stop grasping after. There's the ceasing of holding on to the thoughts as self. I am this thought. This thought pulls through my mind and I grab it. This thought shoots through my mind and I grab it. And I identify with it, and it feels so personal. These moods and these mind states as they pass through, this inner weather system as it passes through, it feels so personal. So ceasing means a letting go of grasping after and getting lost in thoughts. Thoughts have a natural life cycle, just like we do, birth, aging, death. Right, but some thoughts, I don't know if you've noticed this, I have a really hard time letting them die. You know, thought comes up and I get just sucked into its emotion and the urgency of the mind. You notice that the mind tends to have an urgency to it, to fix something, to do something with the thought. I was meditating earlier, to be completely honest. I was sitting down and I had the thought about, we're going to have a baby in about 3 weeks. I was like, shit, I haven't told any of my employers. And I sat with it. I noticed it. I noticed the urge. And I was like, all right. I relaxed and breathe in, breathe out. The thought came back. Hit the timer on my phone. Sent a couple emails. Went back to meditating. So there's no judgment of that, right? But it's just kind of funny to watch the mind and how captivating it can be. And some thoughts, and Vinny Ferraro talks a lot about this. He came here on Wednesday and I was talking to him. And he has such a beautiful way of talking about how important it is that we allow these weather systems of emotion and thoughts and feelings to pass through, that we let them take birth, right? That there are some parts of myself, there are some thoughts and emotions and feelings that I don't even want to come through. I don't even want to let them take birth. There's this kind of like avoidance, this tendency of pushing away or distracting myself from the parts of me that, as he says, are longing to be loved, longing to be admitted into existence so they can actually have their full life cycle, the birth, the aging, and the death. This is the Buddha's first noble truth, is turning towards and embracing the difficulty in our lives. Not resisting or not grasping after thoughts. So the Buddha taught a way, a practice of developing the mind, right? Sati bhavana, which means the cultivation, the development of mindfulness as a training in presence and being able to show up for more of my life. When I'm in the thought stream, I'm in the future, I'm in the past, I'm in the fantasy, I'm in the story. I'm consumed by it's almost mirage that the mind creates. But being able to be present means that we're able to wake up out of the distractions, not just of the mind, but of our busy lives, and to try to show up more often for more of our lives. Present, and then awareness, to be able to watch. When I show up, what is it like right now? My favorite meditation inquiry or practice is, right now it's like this. No judgment. No analyzing, no intellectualizing, no figuring it out or doing anything, just noticing. Right now, it's like this. What is it like right now? Not only being present, but being aware. I think sometimes in our mindful world, as we have it these days, mindfulness becoming a popular topic and practice, we overemphasize the present aspect. Be present. I don't know about you, but it was not a great selling point for me when I first came here, to be present. The present was not very pleasant. Why the fuck would I want to be present? It made no sense to me. Right? But fortunately, I had a teacher that also had a lot of I think, life experience with trauma and grief and loss. And so he said, we're present, but we're also aware, because when we're aware, we can see these passing weather storms, the thoughts, the moods, the emotions, and we can not get so caught in them. It's presence, awareness, and radical acceptance. Right? That means that we're trying to be with things the way that they are, rather than the way that the mind, naturally, of no fault of our own, wants them to be. Wants them to be comfortable, wants them to be predictable, wants them to be secure. And so radical acceptance in that phrase, right now it's like this, it has all three of these: presence, awareness, and radical acceptance. Right now it's like this. This helps us to step back and develop a clear seeing. The word is sampajanya, which means clear comprehension. With mindfulness, we just see thoughts as thoughts, and mind states as mind states, moods as moods, emotions as emotions. This is the practice, at least. Because, of course, every 5 seconds during the meditation, I'm off into the thought, in the emotion, in the story, that's okay. Then we step back and we say, oh. It's almost like the mind's kind of playing a game. It's like trying to have fun with it. I see you, mind. Okay, cool. You're back there. Stepping back and developing sampajanya, which means clear seeing, clear comprehension, to see the thought as a thought. This is the thought in the moment. So I want to read a quote. I've been reading a lot about Ajahn Chah, who's a Thai forest meditation master. He's since passed, but he taught and trained a lot of our American teachers, and really beautiful person, being. And if it says anything about his character, he had over 1 million people at his funeral. Very simple guy that left the city center, went into the forest, and just set out with no goal other than to get to know his mind, to sit down with his mind and get to know it. He talks about the mind, and he says in his simple way, about this mind, in truth, it isn't really anything. It's just a phenomenon, just an experience. Within itself, the mind is already peaceful. That the mind is not peaceful these days is because it follows moods. Sense impressions or feelings come and trick it into happiness, suffering, gladness, sorrow. But the mind's true nature is none of those things. That gladness or sadness is not the mind, but only a mood coming to deceive us. The untrained mind gets lost and follows these things. It forgets itself. Then we think that it is we who are upset or at ease or whatever. But really, this mind of ours is already unmoving and peaceful. Our practice is simply to see the original mind. So we must train the mind to know those sense impressions, feelings, emotions, moods, and not get lost in them. To make it peaceful, just this is the aim of all of this difficult practice that we put ourselves through. He has such a way to get to the heart of the Buddha's teaching. I've never experienced a teacher that's able to transmit the Dharma, to take me right into the middle of the aim of this practice in such few words. Our thoughts and our mind states, without awareness, without mindfulness, they auto-construct our world. Right? That's what the Buddha is saying in this passage too. With our thoughts and perceptions, there's the world and the origin of the world. Our thoughts and perceptions auto-construct our world automatically. It's like they get pulled up on the big screen, and now I'm just watching this loneliness story, or the excitement story, or the once I get, then I'll be happy story. Bhikkhu Bodhi has a really great quote about thoughts and perceptions. He says, "Our thoughts govern our attitudes, our actions, and our whole orientation to the world we live in." Our thoughts might not be clearly formulated in our mind. We may have only a hazy conceptual grasp of them. But whether they're formulated or not, whether they're expressed or maintained in silence, these thoughts have a far-reaching influence. They structure our perceptions, order our values, and crystallize into the framework through which we interpret to ourselves the meaning of our being in this world. There's a lot of power in thoughts. They order our perceptions and our values, and he says that they provide the framework through which we interpret to ourselves the meaning of being in this world. What's been so freeing to me about this practice as I was reflecting tonight is just the simple ability to step back and to observe the thought. Right? And then this other part, which we're going to talk about tonight, is the ability to live with more of a wise response, not to have to live from the reaction of my mind or the automatic construction of my thoughts. To be able to see my biases and my misperceptions, not all the time, but more of the time. And that's my favorite way to practice, is not thinking about enlightenment, which just creates another type of feeling that I'm separate because I'm not doing good enough in my practice, or I'll never be like the Buddha, or whatever. These attainments. But rather to look at how can I do this more often, to wake up more often, and to live with more intention, more purpose, more meaning. What are my values? What am I practicing in this moment? I noticed this weekend. I went home to visit my sister and brother-in-law and her nephews, and I had a really great time. I noticed how many opportunities there were to practice stepping back from my automatic reactions and my automatic biases and views of how she should be living, or her friends, or how my nephew should be raised, or whatever my mind wanted to throw out there. I had a whole grab bag of ideas. And I noticed so many opportunities. And what I noticed is that I didn't take the bait as much as I used to. And how there was this freeing up, the ceasing, as the Buddha calls it, the ceasing of the world, the ceasing of getting caught and lost in those reactions and those automatic perceptions and views. I could just see the thought, not all the time, but some of the time, see the thought and say, okay, don't have to act on that one. Let that thought die a natural death. As my teacher Dave says, let it die on the vine. You don't have to harvest what you don't grow. So when that thought comes in, do I want to water this? Do I want to feed this? Do I want to do all the hard fucking work cultivating this resentment or judgment or criticism? That's a lot of work. There's a lot of space that gets occupied in this mind doing that shit. So I can live with more intentionality. As I wake up, there's not only a moment of awareness, of clarity, but there's an opportunity to practice how I want to respond, right? And this is where the heart practices really come in. Cultivating and developing a wise response to life's joys and sorrows, ups and downs. So the way that I like to think about mindfulness is really the development of two things. One is non-reactive awareness, which is just an ability to step back and observe. When we practice that, it means that we don't judge the mind for having judgment in it. We don't criticize the mind for having criticism in it. We don't get angry at the mind for having anger in it. Let the anger be. Let the judgment be. Let the criticism be. It's not. It's just what it is, right? So stepping back and just allowing space, making space for these thoughts and moods, emotions. And the other way is we're also trying to incline or to direct the mind in a skillful way. The Buddha actually encourages in the path factor on the Eightfold Path a wise effort to cultivate a mind that has skillful qualities to it. And these four qualities that he emphasizes are kindness or loving kindness, it's metta practice, cultivating and developing a mind that is kind, that is easeful, that is friendly. And then compassion, karuna, which is the development of a wise response to pain, caring for and turning towards what's difficult with empathy, understanding, concern. Mudita, which is gratitude, but it's also appreciating and delighting in the joy of others' successes and their happiness. And then equanimity, which is a lot harder to sum up in a sentence or two, but it means something like even-mindedness with wisdom, to respond with wisdom. The Buddha says that all experience is preceded by the mind, ruled by the mind, made of the mind. If you speak or act with a corrupted mind, then suffering will follow you as the wheel of a cart does the track of the ox that pulls it. All experience is preceded by the mind, ruled by the mind, made of the mind. If you speak or act with a calm, bright mind, then happiness will follow you like a shadow that never leaves. So he's saying an encouraging wise intention and wise effort. Two of the path factors are about trying to direct our thinking, our mind state, in a skillful direction towards kindness, compassion, gratitude, and wisdom. So if one of these qualities of mindfulness is more passive, I have a very technical mind, so if this doesn't help, let it die on the vine for you. But I like to think of mindfulness as both passive and active, right? And the way that they talk about this in like some forms of like Vajrayana Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, is the divine feminine and the divine masculine. That there are these kind of qualities of awareness. And one is more passive, but in a strong sense. There's this sense of standing back from. If you've ever been caught up in something that's urgent and that, like an argument with someone, and you make that choice to stand back, that's a hard choice, right? To remain in this passive, receptive state of awareness. Right now, it's like this, to take that breath during the argument, right? To relax around the contraction in the body in the argument. So that's the passive awareness, is just letting be. Resting back. And then there's this active awareness in the sense of bringing forward a quality, meeting the experience with kindness, with compassion, with gratitude, with equanimity. That takes effort. And we all notice those moments too, where you want to say one thing and you step back, and despite what you want to say, you say the other thing. You say the kind thing or the compassionate thing. Right? Or if you're busy and a friend calls and they're struggling with something and you see the phone ring, it's that active quality that sees that and says, I'll answer the phone. Right? It moves forward and seizes that opportunity. And again, there's not any right or wrong things to participate in, like should you answer the phone or not. Some days it's more wise for you not to. Some days it's more wise for you to answer. But it's about this quality of mindfulness, both passively in the sense of stepping back from and actively in the sense of bringing forward to the experience. These are the paradoxes all the time in Buddhism. So the heart practices, these qualities of what we're bringing forward into our lives, are referred to as the Brahmaviharas. Brahmavihara means, actually quite literally when translated, it means the home or the dwelling place of God. And I like to think this is all open to interpretation because no one quite knows what the Buddha meant by some of the things he said. But I believe that the Buddha, based upon his other teachings, where he encourages people to investigate for themselves the causes of well-being and the causes of suffering in their life, I don't believe that he encouraged an external sense of refuge, taking refuge in something out here. But I think that what he says is that we can align our hearts. We can choose to live with our hearts in the home of God. That's in us. That there's this place that we can rest in. There's this abode, right? This refuge that we can rely on that's inside the heart. And he would say, he would talk to people and he would say, you know, especially when people were looking for their happiness out there, people, places, things, experiences, he would always turn it, right? Turn it back on, well, what's in here in this moment? What's in here? What's in the heart? What's in the mind? It's a deeper abiding sense of happiness that doesn't come from being dependent upon conditions. When we say in our own vernacular, unconditional love, right? That's quite literally, I think, what the Buddha is referring to about in these four heart practices. Sometimes they're called the four immeasurables or boundless states, meaning they're unconditional. They're here in the heart. They're a dwelling place. They're a place that you can rest. And so the first of these four is metta. Metta comes from the Pali Sanskrit word mitta, which means friend. Sometimes it's translated as loving kindness, which I actually these days don't mind that much. I appreciate that translation. As someone that's had a lot of mixed messages about what love is, it felt really hard to try that on when I first sat down to practice metta. I was like, I don't know about loving myself. I don't even know really where to start with that practice. But I could get behind this more direct translation of mitta, which means friendliness. I know what it's like to be a good friend or to have a good friend. I know what that's like. Someone that's willing to be present, that's willing to listen, that's gentle, that's patient. Not all the time, but tries. There are intentions there. So when I think about metta, I like to think about, really simply, and they encourage this as a reflection before you practice, is thinking about someone that's been a good friend to you. It doesn't even have to be a person. It could be a pet. Very unconditional, right? Pets tend to, no matter what your day has been like, at the end of the day, meet you with the wagging tail or a cat just crawls up on your lap. Unconditional. And so I like to think about that. Sometimes I like to think about also little kids, my nephews, or it's kind of like innocence. It's before the world got to us and shaped us and gave us our beliefs and our sense of feeling separate and shame, all these really complex human emotions, there was just this spontaneous being. So I like to think, I like to reflect on this idea of friendliness when I practice metta. Metta is a kind and friendly quality of heart and mind that's aimed towards meeting all of life's joys and sorrows. The Buddha said that it's appropriate in every experience. Metta is always appropriate to be kind, to be gentle, to practice that friendly relationship. Now, this is a little tricky because the way that the Buddha talked about metta is not the same as like we might talk about being nice. Right? There's not this kind of like inauthentic sense of covering up how we feel by, they call that spiritual bypassing, right? Pretending like we're nice. That's not really what metta is. Metta instead is a, can I be at ease with this discomfort or this joy or whatever this is, this boredom, however this is in this moment, can I meet it with a kind or a gentle relationship? A friendly relationship to the mind in this moment. During our meditation, when the mind's restless, sitting back, observing, and saying, I see you, mind. May you be at ease. Not you need to be at ease, but may I be at ease with you. May I be kind and gentle towards you and with you, patient with you, like a friend. The Buddha said it's appropriate in every experience. And then there's compassion. Compassion is the heart's response to pain. It seems to be that this is a naturally occurring experience. That if you see something in pain and you identify, if you perceive it through your filter as pain, that the heart naturally cares. Now, the ways that we care aren't always skillful or wise. Sometimes we want to fix or change or control. Right? I notice even automatically if someone is going through grief or loss, sometimes it's hard to stop and actually just be with that. It's like I want to relate to it, or I want to do something to make them feel better. So I care deep down. But really the caring that we're talking about through compassion practice is feeling and caring and understanding that caring is enough. We don't have to do anything extra. You already care and it's already enough. Isn't that amazing? You don't even have to do anything extra. When there's pain, I care. And so there's this really against the stream type of practice with compassion practice of being willing to soften the body and to allow myself, my heart, to connect with what's painful, to feel it. I like using these phrases when I practice. With metta, I like to use the phrases, may I be at ease, may I be at peace, and may I be kind and gentle with myself. Those are my favorite three phrases. May I be at ease, may I be at peace, may I be kind and gentle with myself. With compassion, I like to actually use more personal. I'll say, I feel you, I feel you, I care for you, and I'm here for you. I feel you, I care for you, I'm here for you. And whatever pain, whatever difficulty I may be sitting with in that moment, I just try to remember caring is already enough. Can I feel it? Can I care for it? And remind myself I'm here for it. I'm willing to show up for it. Now, we need to do these things. I'm going to skip ahead and talk about equanimity. We need to do these things with wisdom and with balance. Because when we love without wisdom, it ends up becoming this enmeshed, attached love. Right? This kind of... It becomes conditional and can become codependent. You know, like, I need you to be, I'm going to do everything I can, go out of my way. I'm going to sacrifice my own ease for yours, right? Which isn't actually loving kindness, it's attachment. And not in the Western psychology way where attachment's like nurturing, bonding, it's a good thing. But this kind of clinging, right? This enmeshed clinging. So equanimity is the reminder that your happiness is dependent upon your own actions and not my wishes for you. Even though I wish for you to be at ease, I understand that you are the agent of your own change. You actually have all of the power. It's empowering in that way. I can't do it for you. I can help, I can support, but I can't actually do it for you. Without equanimity, compassion can become pity. Right? And pity is similar in a way, but it's kind of has this view that someone else isn't capable of grieving their own grief or caring for their own pain. And then there's the heart practice of mudita, one of my favorites to talk about. I have this theory. I've been fortunate, I won't name names, but I've been fortunate to listen to a lot of Dharma teachers over the years and then get to meet them and get to sit retreat with them and then get to even hang out with them. And I think that a lot of Dharma teachers end up teaching the most about what they struggle with. This is the one that I teach. Mudita. I also talk a lot about faith. Faith and inspiration and this aspect of gratitude and sympathetic joy, which are two things that I very strongly struggle with in my daily life. Gratitude is taking delight in the goodness in our lives. It's taking active delight. The word for this is an interesting word because we mostly associate it with biblical terminology, rapture. Rapture actually means the capacity to take active delight in things. So we have to take those opportunities to actively delight in the joys and the successes in our lives, to see them, to search for them, to feel into them, to just like the compassion, I feel you, I appreciate you, thank you. Sometimes I like to use those phrases as I reflect. I appreciate you, or I'll say I feel you, I appreciate you, thank you. I'll take active delight. And I just imagine that the things that I'm grateful for, like an internal gratitude list, I just bring them in and out of my mind. And I'll just stop on one and I'll try to take active delight. And then I'll notice about my mind is it will start to look at all the things that are going wrong. It's like, yeah, but your dog's pretty cool, but he also shits on your floor and is not really well trained and doesn't really get along with other dogs. And it's like, okay, I see you, aversion. I feel you, I care for you. And then I switch back. I feel you, I appreciate you, thank you, thank you. May I learn to appreciate all of the joy, all of the successes in my life. What would that be like if I appreciated every opportunity to appreciate something I could? Now, again, this is done with equanimity. This isn't, the danger here is that we get caught in that bypass of I guess this is most distinctly what people talk about when they talk about spiritual bypassing, which is kind of thinking about meditation as just trying to feel positive emotions. You know, it's not a denial of the difficulty in our lives to practice gratitude. Instead, it's an inclusion of the joy in our lives. So it's not a, I'm grateful for this and that and this other thing and an avoidance of what's going wrong, but it's saying both and, both. There is difficulty and sadness and struggle, and there's the joy and the gratitude and the appreciation. So it's a widening of the view. And that's why equanimity helps us to keep that in mind, that my happiness depends upon my ability to relate to my life and to seek the gratitude in my life, and to realize that the gratitude, the real joy in my life, doesn't come from the things. It comes from the skills, I don't really like the word skills, it's my inner therapist talking. It comes from the inner cultivation. And then I've said and talked about equanimity already quite a bit. Equanimity is the balancing factor of the heart practices. So equanimity is an embodiment of all three of these heart qualities simultaneously. Of being kind and gentle, of being able to meet and care for what's difficult, while also being able to take active delight in the joy and gratitude in our lives. And the ability to step back with wisdom and see that my happiness depends upon my actions and not my wishes, and your happiness depends upon your actions and not your wishes. With equanimity, I combine the heart practices and I say, I feel you, I know you, I care for you, I appreciate you, and I understand my happiness is dependent upon my actions and not my wishes. So that last phrase is a little bit clunky. So what I've decided to do is I say, I feel you, I know you, I care for you, for example, with compassion, and I'm not you. I'm here for you, but I'm not you. I'm not reduced down to my pain. I'm not identified with my pain. It's not my pain. It's the pain that's present. I'm here for you, but I'm in relationship to you. Does that make sense? It's kind of something you can play around with, but I feel like it embodies what equanimity means. I feel you. I appreciate you. Right? And I'm not you. I'm not engulfed in that pleasant thing or attached to the pleasant thing. I'm in relationship to it. So what I want to do is I want to do a little bit of some practice together. I was thinking we could do a metta practice for ourselves. I think that's a good practice to do for ourselves. And we'll maybe start by, like I talked about earlier, thinking about a benefactor or someone that's easy to feel a kind or gentle relationship to. So I even invite you right now, we'll meditate for about 20 minutes or so, and then we'll open it up for some discussion. And maybe we'll take just a couple minute break. So real quickly, 2 or 3 minutes, stretch your legs. You can run to the restroom if you want, and then we'll sit together. And during this time, think about someone or some being. It could be a pet. It could be a grandparent, a friend. They don't have to be perfect, just good enough. That if they were to come into the room with you right now and everyone else was to fall away and you were just to get to spend time with them, you would feel a light sense of not being judged or criticized. You'd feel included. Right? So think about that. Reflect on that. Take a couple minutes to stretch your legs, run to the restroom, and we'll get started here in a couple minutes. Giving yourself plenty of time to settle into the body, taking some deep breaths in and out. Just remembering that there's nowhere to go and nothing to do, no right or wrong way to be during the meditation. Just tuning into the sounds, feeling into the body, connecting with the weight of your body sitting. Right now, it's like this. Taking a moment to relax and soften into the body, starting at the very top of your head. Slowly scanning down, softening and relaxing any areas that feel tense or tight. Imagining as if you could breathe in and out of the contracted areas in the body, in and out of the face, softening and relaxing your forehead, eyebrows, the muscles behind your ears, eyes, cheeks, and jaw. Breathing in and breathing out, taking a moment to check into the emotional body, feeling into the chest, the diaphragm, the stomach. Spending some time breathing in and breathing out, making space for emotions, feelings. As you breathe in and breathe out, tuning into the emotional quality, the heart center, the part of the body that feels, that's affected and sensitive to the world. Maybe even breathing in and breathing out and just silently saying the phrase, "I feel you," every once in a while. I feel you. Some people may put a hand over their heart center, or you can imagine as if you're breathing in and out of your own heart, your emotional heart. I feel you. as you breathe in and breathe out, start to bring to mind someone in your life that if they were to walk into this room right now, you would feel a sense of inclusiveness, of kindness, lightness. It's that feeling of when the heart lifts up. This could be a friend, a grandparent, a pet, a child. Taking a moment to connect with what they look like, even if it's only a hazy picture or image. What's the essence of being with this being? Breathing in and breathing out, I feel you, I know you. It's connecting with knowing and feeling their presence. Maybe thinking about their laugh, just the way that they are, what it is that you like about them. Their ability to listen, their patience. Or that you just feel safe around them. You could say anything. And you could be any way around them. You breathe in and breathe out of the heart center, offering these phrases, these wishes of well-being, silently to yourself, just offering to this being, may you be at ease, saying that in your mind, breathing that in and out of your heart, may you be at ease. May you be at ease. Breathing in and breathing out, may you be at peace. May you be at peace. May you be kind and gentle with yourself. Breathing that in, breathing that out. May you be kind and may you be gentle with yourself. Continuing to connect with the image or the essence of this being, offering wishes of well-being. May you be at ease. May you be at ease. May you be at peace. May you be at peace. May you be kind and may you be gentle with yourself. May you be kind and may you be gentle with yourself. May you be at ease. May you be at ease. May you be at peace. May you be at peace. May you be kind and gentle with yourself. May you be kind and may you be gentle with yourself. Breathing in and breathing out. If the mind wanders, it's okay. May you be at ease, mind. May you be at peace. May I be kind and gentle with this mind. And then returning back to this being, the image, the essence, feeling into your heart, breathing in and breathing out. May you be at ease, may you be at peace, and may you be kind and gentle with yourself, offering to this being. Picturing this being at ease in their life, at peace, kind and gentle with themselves. Knowing that deep down, just as each one of us desires happiness and well-being, so too does this being desire peace, kindness, happiness, and well-being. May you be at ease. For this last moment with this being, taking a moment to imagine as if they're sitting right in front of you, their essence. And maybe bowing to them and letting the image fall away as if saying, thank you for being a friend, thank you for being a part of my heart, my life, my support. Now directing your attention to your own heart as you breathe in and breathe out of your heart center, feeling the rise and fall of your chest, offering to yourself, may you be at ease, may I be at ease. Breathing that in, breathing that out, may I be at ease. May I be at ease. May I be at peace. May I be at peace. May I be kind and may I be gentle with myself. However things are for me, may I be kind and may I be gentle with myself, with this mind, with this body, in this moment. Feeling into the heart center. For some people, it's easier to imagine or to visualize yourself. And This could be yourself in the present day or as a child. Maybe you remember a picture that you've seen recently. Before the world got to us, this inner child, innocent, spontaneous, light. May I be at ease. May you be at ease. May you be at peace. May I be at peace. May you be kind and gentle with yourself. May I be kind and gentle with myself. Breathing that in, breathing that out. In your own way, whatever phrases, whatever form your practice takes, we'll practice in silence for these last 5 minutes, continuing this practice. These last couple minutes of the practice, bringing awareness to the fact that each one of us are doing this practice in this room together with our own hearts and minds. Just taking a moment to imagine as if this intention could spread to the people sitting on either side of you. as they sit with their own heart and their own mind, taking a moment internally through meditation just to offer to these people sitting on either side of you or in front of you, behind you, as if there was a circle around you, may you be at ease. May you be at ease. May you be at peace. May you be at peace. May you be kind and may you be gentle with yourself. However things are for you, may you be kind and may you be gentle with yourself. And just noticing that by offering this intention, you're also receiving the intention from the people around you. It's holding us all here in this room together in this intention. And as the Buddha says, imagining as if this intention could spread to cover the earth and the worlds, to the born and the unborn, the seen and the unseen, to all living beings, whatever beings there may be, may all beings be at ease. And may each one of us do the work that needs to be done to free ourselves from suffering in this world. Thank you for your practice.